welcome to a special Jew and Gentile podcast. I am your host, Chris Katulka, and just a few moments, none other than our Jewish sage himself, the one and only Mr. Steve Herzig, will be interviewing Danny Kalischer and Menno Kalischer, Israelis who are pastors in Jerusalem at the Jerusalem House of Redemption. This was an interview that Steve did right before a chapel that we had when we do our staff chapels. And so I think it'll be very enlightening for you to hear. Danny just got back from serving for around four months in the Gaza Strip. And he finally returned home with his family. So you get a chance to hear from Danny and from his father, Menno. I hope you enjoy this interview.
Well, that's a good place to start. In the, you know, you are, when you're there, obviously you're so focused. You don't have phones. You're not looking at what's going on. You're focused on your job, on whatever it is your mission is. So if you could tell us a little bit, what's the morale like? How are people in general? Your dad, I know, encouraged you with folks even from here who donated money, and that money turned into things you were able to get, and anything like that that you could share would be great.
Yeah, so it was a long process, and it's hard to try to focus on something after 4 months, you know, 4 months of so many things, so many experiences. But in general, the first 2 months, we were training and we were waiting. My division, Division 98, at first, we were at the south. The war broke on the 7th of October. And then on the 9th, we came into Kfar Aza, into one of the villages around the Gaza, to clear the village from terrorists. And then we were there for 24 hours. And then we went out, continued to train. We went to the north because there was a high alert that something might happen in the north in Lebanon. So we were there for a few weeks. And then we came back to the south after realizing that there's a lower chance that a war will break in the north. We trained, and after 2 months and a few times that we were on the border with Gaza, and then we kind of, they told us, okay, not today. So on the 5th of December, we went into Gaza. The morale was very high. The first day on the 7th of October, there was more than 100% draft. People came, people that were already released, came and said, you know, I want to join in. So it was very heartwarming. It was amazing to see how many people are just, you know, leaving everything, leaving their families, leaving their businesses, and they come. It was pretty amazing.
Let me ask one, well, I'll probably ask more, but one, how do you differentiate? You said one of the things you did was to weed out the terrorists. It's almost impossible from my point of view. How do you know who's the terrorist and who isn't, since 88% of the Palestinians don't like Israel anyway, and you never know who, how old, it doesn't matter. How do you do that? How do you know who's the enemy and who is not?
Well, first of all, in the first days, the war happened inside Israel border. So when we were in the Kfar Aza village, which is inside Israel, it's one of the villages, the Israeli villages. So everyone who is not a soldier, he has an address of a bullet.
Gotcha.
So it doesn't matter if it's it was empty. There were no civilians. There is, if you see someone who is not wearing uniform, it's a terrorist.
Okay.
It doesn't matter what size or whatever. And by the way, also when we went into Gaza, in the areas where we were, it's places where the Air Force already put the flyers telling people to evacuate.
Gotcha.
So they knew that if they stay, it's like a death sentence. There was, I think, only one or two scenarios where there was a lady that came and the guys decided not to shoot her because they thought she was innocent and they just told her to leave. Our instructions is, if you see someone, no one is supposed to be there. So if you see someone, it's probably a terrorist.
Wow. So, okay. That's really helpful. Thank you. So
yeah, so we were not
first in the, after you trained, you're now back in the south after being in the north. what's going on? What, it's now by the end of January by this time?
No, so we went into Gaza on the 5th of December.
Yeah, I know, but you went up north, right?
Before. No. What do you mean, when? Before we went into Gaza?
Well, at least according to your dad, you're into Gaza, you were up north, and Ronit was up north, but then he said you went south again. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I remember.
I mean, after, I think, if I remember correctly the dates, the IDF entered into the north of Gaza.
Gotcha.
Towards the end of October. I think this 27th of October, if I'm not mistaken, or something like that.
Okay.
And then they had their, how do you call it, maneuver. They were fighting in the north part of Gaza for about a month and a half, and they didn't enter the south. They only kept it in the north of Gaza.
Gotcha.
So during the time that IDF was in the north of Gaza, I was training in the north, and then we moved to the south for training. And then on December 5th, this is when the first strike in the south happened, and we were there. So in the first strike in the south of Gaza.
Gotcha.
Okay, so they kind of divided the north and the south. So from the 5th of December to the 31st of January, we were in Gaza, in the south of Gaza. I was not in the north of Gaza, but in the south of Gaza. And basically our mission was to, at first, to just guard the logistic road. There was a main road that all the vehicles and all the logistical stuff was moving to all of the units that got into Gaza. So our job was to protect this road, and also to kind of do raids or to clear all the houses that were in the area of this road. And then after clearing all the houses to make sure there are no terrorists, the combat engineering came after us and they put all the mines and just exploded all the buildings. So eventually, the first kilometer of Gaza, it's all wiped out. Everything is just ruins, iron and concrete. So it was just a big pile of rubble after we left. So this was basically our mission, just to clear the houses, get information, get the intel, and then just destroy everything we went through.
Now, Danny, one of the things I've been praying for you, I know others as well, and your father mentioned it to us as well. This is a good time. I know you don't have a lot of time. You're supposed to be doing what you're doing, but I would imagine there were opportunities to share the gospel. Is that true? And how did that go? I'd be anxious to hear. Of course, we want Israel to win, Hamas to be gone, but we love the idea of being side by side with people or putting their life on the line and then being able to share life-giving news.
Yeah, so the team I'm with, they're very special people, and I know them for a few years now. But every time we had reserves duty, we were training together for a day or two, you know, because it's reserves duty. And in the last few years, the IDF was kind of cutting down the amount of reserves duty because of the conception that they had in the IDF that, you know, you need to make the army smaller and more professional and all the stuff that eventually they found out was kind of wrong. But eventually I saw them just a little bit, you know, and we didn't have the time to talk deeply. They knew I'm a believer, they knew I believe in Yeshua, but we never had the chance to really talk in depth. Mm-hmm. And now suddenly we have 4 months together, mm-hmm. No phones, and we're guarding together. So we had a lot of time, and I had really, really good conversations with my friends in my team. And it was pretty amazing. I had the time to share the gospel properly, and it was really, really amazing. Most of the guys in my team are religious. They have a kippah and everything. Of course, it was a challenge, and they didn't agree. But it was really, really interesting for them to hear about Yeshua. And I pray for them. They're very, very dear to me. Especially my team, wow, they're really, really strong guys. In my company, there were other teams that the morale was very low, and some of them did not come back after we had our refreshment days out of Gaza. So many people cut and didn't come back. But for my team, they were really, we kind of created a family. They were, they had a very high and good morale. And we encouraged one another, and they're really, really special guys. So I pray for them. I love them a lot. And I had the opportunity to share the gospel with them. And I pray that the seed that God will, you know, will save them, do something.
Were you, are you the only believer? Is it called Company 98? Is that what you're called?
No, the division is 98.
Okay.
The brigade, I'm not sure about the terms, but I think it's Brigade 55, Battalion 28, and my company is Company C.
Company C.
We have A, B, C.
Are you the only believer in Company C?
Yes.
Okay, so we should, we instead of getting names, if we just pray for Company C, that Daniel be a good pastor to them.
Amen.
Good. All right. That is great. Anybody online have any questions for Danny? Now's the time. We have them. We were recorded so other people could hear. I've asked him a few questions. I don't want to be selfish. I'll open it up.
Danny, when you were saying that these are all like reservists that you were working with, and,
yes.
And so they all like so they've all been in the military, but now you're coming back for training. How long was the training?
So we were drafted on the 7th of October, and 2 days after we were already in Kfar Aza, which is one of the villages around Gaza, in order to clear. I mean, first of all, the IDF had to take the war outside of Israel back to the Gazan border. So we first of all had to clear everything in the Aza.
The surrounding villages of Gaza, the surrounding border around Gaza.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a term for that, but so first of all, that's the first thing we did. First of all, to clear and push back every terrorist that is inside Israel. And then after doing that, after clearing the area as much as we could, then it took a little bit of time until the IDF started going into the north of Gaza. I said before that we were training until the 5th of December. We were moving from the south to the north of Israel. But then on the 5th of December, this is when we had our first operation in South Gaza.
Okay. Great. Anybody else have a question for Danny? Now's the time. An Israeli guy that we have access to.
When do you return and where, Danny?
So for now, we have I returned all my equipment. And I have it ready in our emergency storage room. But for now, we are released. And they told us to be on call, meaning that for now, I think there is a very low chance that they will call us back to Gaza because of pressure from many other countries. But the IDF is going through a phase of less intense fighting in Gaza. And I think that slowly it becomes more intensive in the northern border. So I think that the next call will be to the north, but I don't know when.
Do you have any information on Rafah, how that's going?
Well, only from what I hear in the news that, you know, they're doing small operations into Rafah. I don't know if you heard about this amazing extraction operation that they had.
Yes.
Mind-blowing.
What do you know about that? Can you give us some details? I mean, I've read stuff, but it's a special mission. They're on the second floor. They covered them. The whole group covered both of them, and whatever shots they took, the soldiers took instead of the two older gentlemen. That's what I know. Is there any
other? Yeah, I mean, I also know from the news like you do, but after being there, I just know how overwhelming and mind-blowing it probably have been, you know, being there and doing that. I'm speechless, you know, that they did that. It takes a lot of courage to do that. Just amazing, and I'm so happy they had the chance to do that.
Okay, we have Danny on the line here. We've asked him a few questions. We're recording. If anybody has any questions for Danny, we're thankful the Lord answered our prayer that he's here with us and he's out for now. He's on call. He's back with his. Tell us about your wife all those months. Five kids. Does she have any hair left, you know, doing this?
Yes, she does. First of all, she's amazing. That's the first thing I have to say. She's a really amazing woman. And I won. I mean, I received such a blessing from God. Hard to explain. The thing is that for already when the war of Russia and Ukraine started, Rivka and I really had it on our heart to pray, I think almost daily, that God will prepare our heart for hard days. And we were praying with our kids every day. Please, God, prepare our hearts for a hard day. I mean, we're living a good life, convenient life. But we know that it won't stay like this. We had the feeling that, you know, the world is getting crazy and it's not going to stay like this. And we want, you know, if something happens to me or to Rivka or the kids, we want to be able to lean on God and not to, you know, if something happens, if someone dies, you know, to accuse God and to just lose everything. And so we said, God, please prepare our hearts so if something happens, we will lean on you and be faithful to you.
All right, Valentine's Day here in the United States, Danny, you're home. That's great. All right, you better get her something good.
And so on the 7th of October, when we looked at each other, you know, after I was called to the reserves duty, we knew that this is the day we were praying for. So I think God really prepared our heart for this time. And you wouldn't believe, but during this time, she was thriving. It was hard for her, of course, but she got stronger in her faith during this time.
And how did the body of Christ help you out?
That's what I was about to say.
Assembly helped.
She was surrounded by people that loved her, that helped her, you know, every week buy groceries and cooked for her twice a week, people from the church. It was really heartwarming to see how people came and prayed for us and cared for us. I think the practical help is underrated, but if she didn't have this help of, you know, buying groceries and cooking, it would look differently. But really the help and support from the church was air to breathe.
Amazing. Listen, we're recording this. We have since the bottom of the hour. I want to give other people a chance. We have a few minutes left. Normally I talk to other people, but I'd really like to access Danny and his experience. So if anybody has any other question, start throwing them out now. Not all at once. I can't put friends of Israel people. Are you kidding me? No questions? Alyssa, go ahead.
Oh, it's so good to see you, Danny. We've been praying for you.
Thank you.
Just for your experience with your fellow soldiers. I know there have been some prayer requests on how to, you know, share the gospel, be that Christian presence. How did you find in your specific unit? Were hearts more open, more closed? Were they angry at God? Were they searching? What was your experience of that like?
So specifically in my team, most of them are religious. So I think I didn't have the experience of like my teammates of being angry with God or anything like that. I think the opposite of them saying that the nation of Israel should come closer to God, even though they're religious and they kind of need the direction. But I had good conversation with them. They're dear people. They're very good people that I really love, and I pray for their salvation. And I had the opportunity to share the gospel with them, especially during the night when we were doing guarding duties together. And I really, really pray for them for their salvation. They have a lot of motivation. They're very special. They're very special. And I'm not saying that, you know, in vain. They're not the typical people you see in the street. They have love and care, and they have even respect for me, even though I disagree with them and they disagree with my faith and what I believe. We had a very good relationship during this time.
Thanks, Danny. Ralph, you have a question.
Good morning, good early morning, Daniel from Vancouver. We continue to pray for you and your family. and your mom and dad as well, and your sisters and that regularly. Quick question for you. We hear here in Canada, we don't trust any of our media sources. Could you forward to Steve or anybody else reliable sources of information so that we can pray more accurately for you guys? There's so much stuff out there that's contradictory. You don't know what to believe. But are there some news sources or cycles you would recommend?
Well, yeah, the first thing that comes to my mind is Joel Rosenberg's
news.
All Israel News. I think that would be a good place to start.
Okay. Daniel, as Steve said, it has to be in English.
it is in English.
Yes, it is in English. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Daniel.
Okay. Anybody else with a question for Danny this morning or this afternoon for you?
I have just one question, Danny, as far as the threat to the north, what's your feeling on a major war with Hezbollah?
We'll open that up to your dad as well. So you go first, Danny, then we'll ask for your dad's opinion. Go ahead. Yeah.
So what I think is that the IDF prefers now to have just one front against Gaza. During the last few years, I think the IDF made a mistake of downsizing and a lot of other mistakes, and now they're seeing that they got it wrong, kind of realizing what are the threats around them. So they have preferred to have only one front now against Gaza. And after, you know, the flame will be lower in Gaza, then I think they will see what is going on against Hezbollah in Lebanon. I don't think they have the interest of having a war right now against Hezbollah. It's only if, you know, there will be no other chance or no other option. I think they will want to wait to have more money, to have more stabilization, more ammunition, and then see how they react against Hezbollah. That's my feeling.
Mano.
I agree with Danny because I told him everything. No, I'm joking. No. But what he said is right. I mean, Israel does not want to have two fronts in one time because that will initiate immediately other countries as well. So right now with the Palestinians there, it's really having our table full. The situation is as follows. Every day we have a war with Hezbollah. Every day they shoot toward Israel. As long as they just shoot at trees, we swallow it, and basically the Air Force shoot down an artillery, their kind of positions, and they try not to kill too many of them, simply to destroy positions and infrastructures, but not touch human life as much as possible, even though that by now more than 200 of them died. The situation is, if they will shoot civilians, or if they will cross kind of imaginable red line, then all horses are out. That means that's what happened more likely a few hours ago. Maybe you didn't hear it by the news already. They shoot towards Safat and some civilians died. So Israel right now are saying, at least the headlines, okay, we are going right now to move into neighborhoods and villages and let's see what they'll say right now. So maybe the idea that Israel is going to show them copy-paste pictures. You see Gaza, you are next. Maybe it will press them to agree to the French government idea where Hezbollah is going away from the border and the south and the Lebanese army will take its positions. So this is the idea that is come up, but as we know, Muslims, Hezbollah soldiers will be dressed with Lebanese uniforms and nothing will be changed. So right now, this is the situation there, and they try to avoid a war. They try to, but you cannot allow them to feel or to end up the issue. We were the last one to shoot and to kill. You cannot allow that. Even okay. If they will agree and say peace, you have to kill someone there to tell him you lose.
Menno, thank you. We have about 5 minutes left, so I'm going to ask, first of all, those who joined late, we've been talking since the bottom of the hour, and so it's recorded if you'd like to hear it on your own time. Danny has already asked for his prayer for Company C. His Company C is he's the only believer, so we're asking that he'd be a great pastor to them, lead them to Christ, shepherd them. They're special to him and thus special to us. But Menno and Danny, Real quick, in the 2-4 minutes we have, give us some specific prayer requests that revolve around the assembly, Israel, etc., that we could pray for, and then we'll turn it over to our team showers there on today.
Again, the nation is united right now since we have a lot of enemies. I remember my dad tell me so many times in life, thank God for the Arabs. Otherwise, we will eat one another. And he's absolutely true on that, even many years after he went to be with the Lord. So while the war and the pressure, the nation is united. But it's only a matter of minutes or seconds before you will show the real face of the people. The politicians will separate and we will return back to routine. So just pray, really, that the conclusion of the 7th of October will stay in the hearts of people, that we need to trust the Lord, not to trust armies, our wisdom and money. That Zechariah chapter 4, verse 6 will be written on their forehead, not by might, not by power, but by the Lord. And again, that this issue will stay so we can use more evangelism and people will be more apt to listen. Concerning the church needs to do what it needs to do according to Acts 2, with the war, without the war, and so on. This is our regular life, to teach, to love, and to care. That's what we do. We're still about 20-something soldiers in the army. Right now, as a church, both churches. And we are always on the toes to be there for them, whatever you need. Ronit is still in the army. Her battalion was released, but as an officer of the battalion, she needed to stay. All their logistics were taken. She couldn't say, Dad, I don't have a car. So the church gave her a rented car for as much as she need in order to finish her job there. And most likely by next week, she'll finish on Thursday. So just pray that she'll finish everything well and be able to go back home.
Okay, Danny, Company C and what else?
What?
Company C and what else do you have as far as prayer requests?
I personally ask if you can please pray for my return. It's not easy to come back home and to come back to normal life after being 4 months in a parallel world. I guess it will take time. There's a weird feeling. And I just need prayer to have wisdom from God and motivation and power and strength, whatever you can think of now when coming back.